Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Bernstein and McKnight brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Wolves are making big plans for their 25th anniversary. Get your season tickets now and receive exclusive benefits. Visit ChicagoWolves.com or call 1-800-THE-WOLVES. You heard this man on these airwaves last night, and I had gotten all the emails from Mitch, and I knew all this was happening. But still, when you turn on the radio and you actually hear Len Casper doing analysis alongside Pat Hughes, you go, oh, that's a little different. Sounded like you were enjoying yourself.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun. It was really cool to ride shotgun with Pat. I've known Pat, man, since probably 1990 back in Milwaukee when I was just a college kid trying to kind of make some connections out at County Stadium in Milwaukee, and we had a blast last night. I know it wasn't Ron Coomer, but just trying to keep his seat warm.
I had an appearance last night, so I was in and out of the radio broadcast and the TV broadcast for that matter, and every time I heard you, you were on the analyst role. Did you stay there all night? Was that
and actually in the fifth,
it's going to be fun.
I wanted to hear Zach because the last time he had done play-by-play with me was in spring training, and he's improved by leaps and bounds and had a great fifth inning to call, man. It was a five-run bottom of the fifth, and I was just enjoying kind of kicking my feet up and commenting every once in a while.
Something else that I noticed, and I had to tweet at Dave Miska to confirm it, but I noticed on the radio broadcast that the crack of the bat sounded fortified. It sounded like the old This Week in Baseball bat crack that they would use with Mel Allen's descriptions. And as it turns out, when it is a nationally televised game, our radio broadcast engineering uses the TV effects mic.
Oh,
yes.
And it all sounded amplified.
Yes, and typically that's what happens. The radio broadcast will grab the effects, is what they call it, from the TV broadcast. And I don't know how it sounded on the radio, but
loud.
In the booth, it sounded great.
Well, it sounded loud because in the very first inning, and I know there was some hard contact off of Hendricks, but I'm listening, and as soon as I heard it, I'm like, oh, that's gone. And then they're like, no, line drive into center field. But some of my usual sense, my calibration of using sound to determine how hard a ball is hit on the radio broadcast, I'm pretty good at it because I know the way that Miska mixes everything now, so I can pretty much tell. But that I knew something was up.
Natural sound on the radio for baseball to me is huge.
Yep.
Obviously, football and basketball have their own things with the sneakers squeaking on the court and all of the pre-snap stuff that you hear from the quarterback. But there's nothing like hearing the crack of the bat on the radio, and Pat uses it beautifully. John Miller, I think, is really good at that as well. And hearing the vendors in the background, it's awesome.
So, Len, last night the Cubs get a win, obviously, but we are back to a conversation about pitching in a way that I would imagine Cubs front office really didn't want to be in a conversation about pitching coming out of the All-Star break. I know it's a shortened thing for the Cubs and Cardinals just with the 3 days, but how much does Brandon Morrow's injury affect what they're able to do and what they need to do? Two different things, I think, at the deadline.
Yeah, I think, I don't think it affects what they want. I think that has kind of been consistent all along, even if Morrow had not been on the DL at all, and now he's on for the second time. I think the way it could possibly affect things is that teams now know that you need it a little bit more, and they might ask for a little bit more. And so that's the only part of it that I think can affect them a little bit. But I don't think they're done with Jesse Chavez. I think they're still looking for, a closer-type guy who you can pair with Morrow and pitch in big spots. They trust the guys they have, but I don't think you can ever have enough.
Then how do you let it happen naturally? I know Joe's got a really good sense for whom to use when. I thought even when Dunson came in, like what a perfect spot, what a perfect amount of leverage to use for Dunson there. And I know that's one of the things that Joe's been proven pretty good at. But you got to be right on this. He's got to understand that circle of trust. Is Justin Wilson there? Why isn't C.J. Edwards that guy, the exact guy you're talking about, because you would think if Morrow's down, Edwards, okay, right now that's your job, but apparently he's not.
No, well, I think two things. Number one, he was on the DL for a bit, and I think Joe likes him in particular spots where he can say, I want him to face these three guys, so you need to have him be kind of the floating reliever late in the game. And then I think thirdly, and maybe most importantly, and this would be a great question for Joe directly, is Pedro Strop's experience and the fact that you save him for those chances. And there may be a little part of he's earned it because he's been here and hasn't really pitched in the ninth inning all that often. But I think that he's willing to adjust as needed. And I'm telling you, if Randy Rosario was the best matchup to get Matt Carpenter or some tough left-handed hitter in the ninth inning, I think he'd use him to get a save.
I was thinking last night about this too, seeing Pedro come in. I had this feeling of, well, he's earned it. Now is his time. This is cool. He gets a chance to do this. That said, Steve Cishek has been kind of like a comfort blanket for Joe for a lot of parts of this season, regardless of who's been up and available in the bullpen. I almost see this as an opportunity for him to use Cishek, but also manage the innings, knowing that, you know, if Steve is closer, then three outs are his, and you get to deploy the rest of the guys a little bit and kind of manage Steve a little.
Well, let's look at it this way. I think we're all in agreement. I don't want to speak for both of you, but the paradigm shift of the best reliever in the best spot, right?
Yeah.
So without Morrow now for at least the next week, maybe Joe is using, quote, his best reliever earlier to get those big outs. And so while a Strop or a Wilson or a Dunsing or an Edwards might get the final out or two, he has said the seventh inning when I brought in this guy to get these two outs,
right,
that was where the game was. And I think this does, in a weird way, give Joe even more flexibility to not say, I have to use my closer in the ninth. He can use his, quote, closer in the seventh or the eighth. And I think for Cishek, the fact that he can get more than three outs makes him almost too valuable to use as
a
closer.
Point.
You don't want to save
point.
A guy who you feel like can get outs in the sixth, seventh, or eighth.
And it's something I wondered about with Morrow, too. We talked to him, and we actually were, it was one of these shows when we were outside on Gallagher
That's right.
Way talking to him about it. Because he's a type 1 diabetic, he needs a little more advance warning to get his blood glucose where it needs to be before he performs. And I didn't really think about that as a complicating factor. You can't just say, hey, get up and start throwing, or, you know, the game just flipped, we need you. That's an onus on the manager and on the pitching coach and Lester Strode and everybody involved to make sure that he's got ample warning to say, look, we might need you here. You might want to, you know, prick your finger and get everything tested here a little earlier. And it's it matters in a way that it doesn't for others.
Yeah, it does. You're right. And for the most part in his career, he's been a starter or a closer where his role has been fairly defined. The other thing about Brandon Morrow that we shouldn't underplay, he's been maybe top two or three in the league when he's been healthy. Probably would have been an all-star had the Cubs pushed him a little harder in the first half. But that stuff's nasty. Mm-hmm. I mean, when Brandon Morrow comes in the game, I don't know what the confidence factor is for you guys, but on a scale of 1 to 10, for me, it's about a 9.9,
It's like Wade Davis last year.
Yeah. It's a comfortable
right?
watch.
It's almost automatic.
The All-Star break always brings about, you know, a little bit of a pullback from the game. You kind of get to, you know, Dan and I delved into a bunch of other stories. You got some rest and relaxation.
He was on the couch tickling his dog, so to speak.
Right.
Len was. Yes.
That's not a euphemism, by the way. That's a literal.
Well, no, you know, whatever you got to do to chill out.
After hearing the dog bark in the background of previous interviews, I pictured a much larger animal.
No. No,
okay. I miss it.
Their bark
did you
is
tweet
much,
a video?
Much bigger than their bite. Let's put it that way. Yes,
what,
I did.
A little Chotsy kind
you
of thing.
You can check it out.
Yeah, he's literally like on the couch, his
terrier,
eyes half closed, and he's kind of.
And she will not let me go. It's like every time you stop, it's like, nope, I want more. Little nudge, relentless.
Oh man!
Oh, look at this guy. Yeah, that's fearsome, is what it is. That's a guard dog.
Yes, she is.
Keep the postman away.
That's Betty.
So I wanted to, the All-Star break comes around, and I think some fans, regardless of how long you've been covering this game or how nerdy or not that you are around this one, the first half ends, and then you hope that the things that went well the first half keep going. Maybe if it was something that was out of the ordinary, maybe it was some guy who hadn't been good the last two seasons, signed himself a big contract, had a great first half, and you go, boy, if only that happens for the second half. Jason Hayward was 3 for 5 last night, all of them singles. But if that's a continued presence, and Joe has him, I put the lineup somewhere else, third today in a lineup. If that's a guy that has the kind of production that a top third of the lineup needs, then this team feels a lot different yet again.
Absolutely. And the guy he's been this year is the guy offensively they signed. If you look at his rate stats, pre-signing with the Cubs, so take the first 2 years here out of the mix, this is what he's been. And I think you'll gladly take that, plus the gold glove defense and all the other intangibles that he brings. Top to bottom, this thing has been really impressive. And when you think about 2 weeks ago, the lowest OPS qualifier on the team was Anthony Rizzo. That's actually pretty good that they've been able to ride a lot of other guys. And the funny thing is, Rizzo leading off again today?
Yeah, he is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, Rizzo, five then Bryant, in a row. Then Hayward.
I think he's going to ride this thing as long as Anthony keeps hitting. He's not going to be the leadoff guy for the next 30 days, but... You know, Joe gets criticized for changing his lineups and having guys come in and out of the lineup, but the proof is every time Rizzo does this, he's really, really good, and I think Joe acknowledges that, and he's flexible.
I saw this tweet from Tony Andracki of NBC Sports Chicago. It is July 19th. Jason Hayward has more home runs than Addison Russell, more RBI than Chris Bryant, and a higher OPS than Anthony Rizzo.
There you go.
Who could possibly have predicted that?
Nobody.
Nobody.
Nobody on the planet could have predicted that.
And the at-bat that he had, fouling off multiple low off-speed pitches from Martinez, and then eventually just getting barrel to ball of an outer half tailing fastball and just squeezing it out into left field on a line, was such an aware and professional and in control at bat that you just saw, regardless of the outcome of that particular plate appearance, to see him with a full space command of what was going on was really impressive.
Well, and the other thing, you look at his splits right now with nobody on base. I think he's hitting under 200 or around there. With men on base, it's like 370. Runners in scoring position, it's like 340. I don't know what to make of that, and probably nothing. It might just be he's been really good overall. But it also could be a little bit of teams have decided with men on base in big spots, he's the guy they're going to attack, that mm-hmm. they'd rather not go after Bryant or after Rizzo or after Baez. But they're going to say, look, to get out of this inning, we need to retire Jason Hayward. And good for him, man. He's come through in some huge spots. And I would say that the moment of the year has to be the game-ending grand slam off the left-hander against the Phillies. And that was a great moment for him personally, too. And I think the whole team kind of rallied around that. It was something I think he needed, and to kind of feel that after two really tough years.
I want to move you around the league a little bit, Len. We'll stay in the NL Central. Dan and I are going to do the Midday Midway. We've got a couple of different things lined up. And since we're really just off the All-Star break and just one game in, I think we kind of get to look around the first half of baseball. Your love of Joey Votto has been well expressed throughout your broadcast.
Did you see the
career tweet
today?
I'm saving it.
Yeah, we can't do the tweet. We're going to do it in a very specific and pointed way because I haven't yet. We're waiting.
I saw because Shambi retweeted it.
He sent it to me this morning.
Okay, because I'm using it at 11.
I think I remember you talking about Votto on a broadcast a couple of years ago, and it might have even been before JD was here. And Joey Votto, the Cubs were playing against the Reds, and Joey Votto's having a rough at bat, and he takes a weird, goofy swing at something inside. And you mentioned that at points, you believe that Votto might take bad swings on purpose. That throwing that bait out there against a pitcher because he's so confident mm-hmm. in what he can and can't do with baseballs in and out of the strike zone. Is that I want to make sure that I had that right, that that's something that you've said before on a cast. And if that's the case, how unique is that skill set? How unbelievably rare is that in your coverage?
I probably said it. It probably wasn't true, but it looked like it. And I guess my point would be, if anybody did it, it would be Joey Votto. It's the whole Greg Maddux and spring training trying to set up an at-bat for later in the season. My guess is he would tell you it was just an ugly swing because I got fooled.
I'm sure that's what he'd say.
I said when Baez in San Diego the other night, He he kind of cautiously ran through the bag, and he just – something was bothering him. And I said, I wonder if he's deking the Padres. And the next pitch, he steals second and scores on two throwing errors. So I don't think that happened. I think Javi really felt something. But there are guys who kind of set things up where you're like, well, he's not going to run here. Or, man, he looked terrible on that pitch. And then you throw the next pitch, and it's the same spot, and he hits a three-run homer.
Peyton used to do that all the time. I've talked to Jared about it a lot. Walter would get up slowly so sure. as to let people know that I'm hurt, I'm not doing it, and then just come out the next time around and break people.
It is even that. The great defensive backs, and Deion Sanders would lull you into a sense of a receiver's openness when he knew just how quickly he could eat up a cushion or explode into an area, just taking advantage of an instantaneous decision where a quarterback would register somebody as open, and no. That was he wanted to make you think that.
Yep. Well, the Votto part, I'd be curious to ask him at some point. But speaking of John Shambian, you guys had him on a few days ago. He's my best friend in the business and maybe in the world. But he interviewed him for one of their broadcasts on TV a couple of weeks ago. And he said, when you see the strike zone in your mind, is it like a beautiful mind thing where all you see are equations and like green globules and things floating around? And he said no, but I was curious what his answer would be.
No, because that's a real question.
It sure is.
About when somebody who has an ability that others don't have to describe what it actually looks like to them. And to make the football analogy, again, that was Brett Favre at his peak. Would make a throw, and you would. Our response is, "Oh my God, what an unbelievable throw! How he got it in between those guys." But to him, it's just open. It's just that's the throw. It's I know where I can get it, and I can put it there. It doesn't look amazing to him because it just registers, you know, yes or no, open, not open.
Well, that's where I would really like to have a very private conversation with Paul Molitor. And somebody like him, the rare Hall of Famer who is now a manager and watches his hitters and probably at times says, why can't you X, Y, or Z?
Ted Williams.
Because I can't.
Yeah, Ted Williams. It was the same, that was the criticism of Ted Williams as a manager. It's like, well, how do you lay off that pitch? Like, I can't. I don't know how to.
That was a criticism of Gretzky too, right? And you're a hockey guy. That was kind of the criticism there when he was coach. It was Coyotes, right?
Yeah. And I've heard all these Barry Bonds stories, very similar. I think he struggled as a hitting coach. And by the way, I think Paul Molitor is a good manager. I'm just saying that I think there have to be moments because he was such a great hitter where he can't understand why a guy can't do whatever he does. Can I tell you the quick Barry Bonds story?
Yeah, absolutely.
This is my favorite story. John Smoltz told it to me. And he didn't tell me I couldn't use it on the air, so I'm going to. So I don't know. It was the All-Star game, whatever year it was, probably early to mid-90s. And they were getting ready for the Home Run Derby, and some of the National League guys were razzing Barry about Mark McGwire. And I don't know what the issue was, but essentially it was the way the Derby was set up, Barry was kind of complaining. And essentially Smoltz and a couple of other guys said, just go hit 50 home runs and beat him. And Bonds took it as that they were kind of rooting against him, which they weren't. It was just kind of jocular humor in the clubhouse.
Well, that's how he took everything.
Yeah, and like at Jordan, one point, Barry said to Smoltz, Smoltz, next time I face you, I'm going to hit a home run, and I'm going to pirouette at home plate. And Smoltz said, fine, you do that, and then if I strike you out, I'm going to sit down on the mound. And so it went back and forth. So fast forward about two, and then later he said, I'm going to hit two home runs off you. So it just kept upping the ante. Hey. So mid-September, the Braves are 15 games up. They've already clinched the division. And they're facing the Giants. First at bat, Bonds takes him deep. Second at bat, Bonds takes him deep again. So he told him, I'm going to do it twice. He did it. He says, so after the game, we're on the team bus. It was getaway day. And Bonds walks out of the tunnel and says, where's Smoltz? And he walks onto the Braves bus and says, I told you I was going to take you deep twice.
God.
And then he looks at the rest of the team. He goes, and now go win a ring. And walks off the bus. How great is that? I'm going to take you deep twice. He does it, and then he basically says, I told you I was going to do it.
The only other name that you could have inserted into a story like that with everything else sort of a sport equivalent, and I would absolutely believe you 100%, would be Michael Jordan.
Sure.
That is entirely Jordan-esque.
Yeah.
Although Jordan would probably wait 10 years to to exact the "I told you so"
slow
that,
knife.
Yeah, that he would actually let that be a dish served colder. But that I believe it because these guys are psychopaths. Yes. So some of these great athletes are absolute psychopaths in their own way.
Next time you have Smoltz on, please ask him that story. It's so good when he tells it.
It was 1997.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
I'm just looking at home run logs. I've got two back-to-back against Smoltz. It's got to be 97.
All right, Len, as we let you go, we're going to dive into this. This was just posted at FanGraphs. The Cubs are on pace for their worst rotation ever.
What?
Wow.
Worst rotation ever. Cubs starting pitching since 1974. 2018 is at the very, very bottom of this graph, of this particular chart.
Wins above replacement?
Yeah, and there's some specifics here, but the Cubs are firmly in charge of the NL Central, now up three games and featuring their worst rotation ever.
So here's my question. I want to know what every other team is because I think the lack of innings pitched might be a part of that.
If it's pitcher war, yeah.
I believe if we are looking at the current calculation of pitcher war, it may be a part of an overall trend that is proving less punitive than it would otherwise be. I like your angle on that. Mm-hmm. So, Len, you may have an interesting day at the park and an interesting couple of days weather-wise, but thanks for joining us.
As always, a pleasure. Thanks, guys.
That is Len Casper, brought to you by Dell. Dell Small Business Technology Advisors know there's nothing small about your business. They provide one-on-one partnership and reliable Dell PCs with Intel Core processors. Call 877 by Dell. Hub Arcus is going to join us at 10:40 with Bears news, but we got this Cub thing that might be a little troubling. We'll see if you find it meaningful, and we'll see if Len's right about his hypothesis next on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Kyle Hendricks. He disagrees with me, and he said that was a bad pitch on the pitch that Tommy Pham hit out. It really didn't look that bad to me. Maybe he just missed his spot.
Yeah.
But there was some tail on it. It had a nice little humpback on the sinker, and it looked like it was falling out of the zone, and he just jumped on it.
Yeah, I'm watching the replay. Here, I'll give you. I got the replay on MLB TV. It hung in the zone for a long time. You know, sometimes the shape of the pitch can be good.
Right.
You know, it's got some tail on it. It's got some action. You said, here, just hit the play button on that. I can't reach that far.
Okay.
But it stays in the zone a little while, and Pham gets a good long look at it.
Yeah, I see
what
you mean.
Coming back into that right hand.
It would have been a ball, though.
No, I don't think so. Well, unless he caught it out in front.
That's what he did. Yeah. Look where his weight is.
He might be right.
I thought it would have been a ball, and he jumped out of it again.
He hit the ever-loving hell
out
of that
ball. Yes, he did. And Kyle's the pitcher, so he's allowed to say if it's good or bad. Sports of the Score brought to you by Northwestern Football. Coach Fitz and the Wildcats host Michigan, Nebraska, Wisconsin, Notre Dame, Illinois, and more this fall at Ryan Field. Season and single game tickets are on sale now at nusports.com. And this segment is brought to you by Lakeside Bank. Banking is pretty much one size fits all. If you don't fit, you don't matter. At Lakeside Bank, people do matter, so they customize, tailoring their products and services to fit you. Join Lakeside Bank. It's about time. So this just posted at FanGraphs, and the headline is attention-grabbing. It is, the Cubs are on pace for their worst rotation ever. So the Cubs rank 10th in wins above replacement as a group, and it's workable. It's fine for a contending club. But the rotations rank relative to others. They place 26th, rather compared to other individual starters. Stated differently, as a group, the Cubs starters have been outperformed by 9 major league pitchers. It seems workable. Huh. Less fine for a contending club. Only 6 teams, Orioles, Padres, Rangers, Reds, Royals, and White Sox, have received less production from their rotation. And none of them are threatening to win a championship.
I was just going to say, there's something very common about those teams.
Yep, so they have some pretty good starters. Darvish, Hendricks, Lester, Quintana. They've all authored multiple above-average seasons, but Darvish has been hurt or bad. Hendricks and Quintana inconsistent. Lester appears to be benefiting from a combination of luck and defense rather than his own skill. And we keep saying that. It might make people mad, but he has been lucky and he has been defense-reliant.
There's a lot, and we got more in this FanGraphs piece to get to, but there are a lot who have fought back some against the peripherals. I mean, acknowledging that, yes, they are bad, but also finding within Lester's performance a little bit of skill in mitigating when contact happens. We'll get to that a little later.
So with their current 2018 pace, their wins above replacement would be by far the lowest for their rotation since 1974. And it's added here that the chart itself is misleadingly positive.
How so?
Because two of the seasons, 81 and 94, what do they have in common, Connor?
Strike years.
Yep, they're projected to beat those years because they were strike shortened. But the 3.0 WAR is the lowest first half total going back to at least 1974. And while the starter reliever splits aren't perfect before 1974, this might actually become the worst rotation in Cubs franchise history if they don't improve in the second half.
All right, two things to point out. One is that the headline itself is the Cubs are on pace for the worst rotation ever, but really since 1974. So just keep that in mind as you go back through things. I understand why the cutoff there, because of things you can measure and the way rotations have been deployed. But Len pointed out a pretty good point, that the idea of WAR itself, it's a counting stat per se. So by not being out there as long and by rotations not working as long. The strike years actually kind of point this out, too. Mm-hmm. Like they are projected to beat those strike years because they didn't accumulate enough innings to accumulate the amount of WAR that we're talking
Correct.
About.
And we're not going to get too far into the weeds here, but they do use some other numbers using expected fielder independent pitching and saying the good news is if the Cubs pitchers can hit their projections, they might be able to beat their ERA projections given the quality of the team's defense. However, here's the bad news. Yu Darvish hasn't thrown off a mound
right.
since trying to come back from the DL. And you heard yesterday on The Score, Jim Hickey say that he's still weeks away from coming back.
Right.
Tyler Chatwood has recorded more walks and hit batters than strikeouts and hasn't gotten better. Mike Montgomery, in his last four starts, has had a 6 ERA and a 5.10 FIP. And in his last two starts, he struck out just 3 batters.
But how much do you trust true talent, right, in this rotation?
I think
to a certain point, you have to, if indeed this is the worst rotation the Cubs have had since 1974 and they are on pace to continue, then there also needs to be some sort of, if not belief in, then expectation for a bit of regression back to guys being
themselves,
the guys they've been in the past. Now, the concerns they pointed out here, the fact that Jim Hickey is telling Barry and Joe on the Mully and Hanley show yesterday that he's weeks away from returning, that's a real... that there's nothing to do with true talent in that conversation. That's just a can-a-dude pitch. And right now, the answer to that question is, I don't know. It's a big shoulder shrug.
The conclusion here is the Cubs might have a tough time trying to out-defend and out-mash opponents in October. But even after a disastrous first half of starting pitching, teams in good shape to get to the playoffs for a fourth straight season, and that is a feat never before accomplished by the franchise.
And remember what Joe will get to do. If the starting rotation's been as bad as it has been in the first half, as it will be in the second half, he'll shorten the starting rotation.
Also shorten games. Yes, he'll also start bullpenning. Yeah.
He'll clip things back. He'll shorten the rotation. He'll use whichever guys he trusts. We mentioned his circle of trust in the bullpen and how that's changed getting into the playoffs the last couple of years. Well, maybe his circle of trust in the rotation changes this time. Maybe that's the contracting circle that matters more for the Cubs heading into the playoffs than the bullpen itself.
This segment was brought to you by Orkin. Every home is unique. That's why Orkin relies on the latest science to get rid of pests. Visit Orkin.com today. Orkin, pest control down to a science. Boy, do we have stuff coming up. Not only is Hub Arkish going to tell us about yesterday, the opening of training camp in Bourbonnais, the promises made for the physical camp, etc., we've got a chance for you to win $1,000 coming up in just a moment. It is a moment you do not want to miss when you get that text keyword. So keep it right here. The Bernstein and McKnight Show on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
What were we doing?
Yeah. It is time for your chance to win $1,000 in cash on The Score. This hour's keyword, appropriately, is pipe. text pipe to 72881 by the end of the hour again. The keyword is pipe to 72881. One randomly selected nationwide entrant from this hour will win. Please do not text and drive. Why? Message and data rates may apply. Hub Arkish is on Twitter at @Hub_Arkish. Pro Football Weekly, WSCR, Shaw Media. He is all things football. He was there to ask questions of Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy and others yesterday in Bourbonnais, and he joins us now on The Score. What's happening, Hub?
Somebody has way too much time on their hands, guys.
No, that's Rick Camp doing his job right there and enjoying every bit of it.
Yeah, well, Camper's got to be careful about the whole context situation, but that's okay.
I found it fun yesterday to hear the discussion of the physical camp and this image of putting a callus on this team, building up the rough and tough edges on a physical football team. And it sounds to me like first-year coach, because they all come in and say the same thing.
In a lot of regards, I think that's true. I like this guy, though. I got to tell you, I like this team, this duo. They seem to fit well together. They seem to work well together. They actually, to be honest with you, the thing that struck me yesterday, I was sitting there looking at them, they looked a little tired for the first day of camp. I think it's been a whirlwind, you know, 6-7 months. They've been through a ton. They've done some really good work. They've gotten good reviews. And it was almost like it's finally settling in. You know, they've been in Bourbonnais for the whole week already. They had the rookies out there. And I think they need kind of a reset here. And so some of what we heard yesterday, they weren't some of the canned answers that we're used to hearing. And one of them was when this whole idea about the physicality of the camp came up. Because, A, there are restrictions that have been put in by the collective bargaining agreement. There is only so much they can do. And B, they're going to get the first starter injured, and all that live stuff's going to go away. I mean, we've seen this 100 times. So I like that Matt Nagy views it that way. I like that they're discussing that. I've always believed there should be more live action in training camp. But Dan, as you say, the reality is, you know, it's going to take a few practices. Somebody's going to get dinged up, and then they're going to go review the practice schedule.
Hub, is it just a matter of waiting on Roquan Smith? Is this fait accompli, or are there actual worries involved in the conversations between the Bears and his agency, CAA?
Nothing to worry about. This is Joey Bosa set this off when he found this debate about the fourth-year option or the fifth-year option if they don't pick it up. And now you had, I don't know if any of the others have come in, but as of yesterday, 7 of the top 10 picks were undone. And this is the first time, you know, in the last decade or so. Well, not decade, since they did this CBA in 2011. Everybody I've talked to, all my sources indicate that there's nothing other than the language, that it's this whole, you know, fourth-year option thing. And I don't think there's anything to worry about. If he's not at practice today, there's nothing to worry about. If this drags into the middle or end of next week, it becomes a distraction, and so you worry about that. But, I mean, you know, Roquan Smith wants to be there. They want him to be there. They'll figure this out. And the punchline is it's really all about nothing. You know, these guys, it's about if you get cut, you know, in that fourth year, should it be fully guaranteed and you should still be able to go sign with somebody else as opposed to having an offset? These guys don't get cut in the fourth year, you know. And all my sources told me that the whole Bosa thing was a stall tactic and it was about something else. But that was where these agents found this window, and it gives them something to you know, convince athletes that they're doing their job for them, and you know that they're crossing every T and dotting every I.
Hub, something I was wondering aloud about yesterday, and was hoping to ask you about today, is I understand the Bosa stuff and precedent on that fourth year for a lot of the top rookies. Do you think or get a sense at all that an expiring CBA in 3 years has anything to do with the number of rookies that we're seeing kind of quibble over the same kind of language? We saw so many free agents take three-year deals with that CBA expiring after that third year. I wonder if that's playing into this at all, or is it more of a, hey, Bosa, open the open Pandora's box here?
You know, Connor, I think that's a great point as we see the pending expiration of this 10-year deal starting to impact the game in different ways. And I think it absolutely impacted free agency this year. Now, this particular issue, though, It doesn't expire for 3 years. The kids have to sign contracts, the young men, I should say, have to sign contracts under the terms of this CBA. So I think in this case, it really is more about just this whole fourth-year thing. I mean, I've been checking not only on Smith, but a bunch of these other guys who are out too, and I'm hearing the same thing in every one of these cities, that this is what they're all talking about.
This segment's brought to you by Indeed. Are you hiring? With Indeed, you can post a job in minutes, set up screener questions, and zero in on qualified candidates in an online dashboard. Get started at Indeed.com/hire. One thing I did not hear yesterday, Hub, and maybe this had been addressed before, or maybe we're just sort of getting lulled into allowing them to do this. Have they actually firmly addressed expectations for this team? Because on the one hand, it would be very easy to say, look, there are other teams in the division that are still better. On the other hand, you could be where I am and lean into the Rams comparison and say, we're making the playoffs this year. We expect to make the playoffs this year. Has anybody pinned them down on that?
No, I didn't hear those questions yesterday. I haven't heard them during all the off-season pressers. I've heard it asked on occasion and not answered. I think there's almost like an unwritten understanding that with a rookie head coach, how much can you really press him? Not only is it his first year with this team, it's his first year ever. And, you know, he's inheriting a team that went 14-34 over the last 3 years. So I think those are the reasons or excuses if people prefer for not pushing him on it. But, you know, justifiably, I don't know what the guy can say. I mean, he has said that his goal is to win every game. He has said our goal is to go to the playoffs and the Super Bowl. But as far as this year specifically, when asked about it on the few occasions over the last few months, I think Matt Nagy has tried to downplay it a little bit. And I think it was you guys, actually, Dan, who had him on at one point and said our playoffs a fair expectation, and he kind of indicated not really. Clearly, that's where he wants to take this team. That's where every player in that line. When you talk to the players, they're all talking about winning the division. Akeem Hicks made reference to it yesterday. So the players are pretty emphatic that they expect to be a contender this year. But I don't think anybody has really pushed Ryan Pace or Matt Nagy to take a position on that.
Speaking of players being a little emphatic, we saw Mitchell Trubisky actually give a quote yesterday. I mean, for better or worse, he's been a bit of Captain Cliche in his first year plus in the league. And yesterday he stands up for himself and lets everybody know he's Madeline Kahn and tired of being labeled this, that, or the other thing. I actually kind of liked what Trubisky had to say. I admired the backbone and the spittle that he put into it.
I like everything about this kid so far. He was better on the field than I expect him to be. And again, we're talking about the tangibles and the tools, not the results, because that's all part of what the bigger picture was. But more than that, the way he carries himself and the way we've watched him start to mature, he's still got a ways to go, but the way we've watched him start to mature over this last year, I just think there's a lot to like and nothing that's disappointed me so far. I am a little uncertain, however. Yesterday was the first time I saw, and he went out of his way to let us see it, a chip on his shoulder. And he mentioned doubters a couple times. And there was a big piece that Mitch sent around to all of us. I think it was from the Bleacher Report where a lot of the focus about it was doubters. And I can't figure out where that's coming from, because pretty much not from the day he got here. There were certainly doubts about the trade up one spot. I don't doubt it. I think it was wrong. There's a difference there. I'm taking a position. But as far as picking him, really from the day he got on the field and started playing, I think people are actually overrating him right now based on his performance on the field. So I'm not sure where he's got it in
his
head.
You've become a doubter.
Huh?
You're a doubter now.
Why? Because I think people are overrating him?
Yes, if you think already Arkush calls him overrated.
No, I said people are overrating him. I actually just got done saying I like everything about him. So I don't think he is overrated. I think people are placing him at a level that he has not attained yet, but I do think he's going to get there. And so, yeah, it's just interesting. I mean, what's happened here is he's now completed a full year of you know, life in the eye of the storm. Everywhere he goes, everybody he sees, every question he's asked, and I understand, you know, why that gets old, but in terms of responding to it, when he talks about all the doubters, I don't know who those people are. I don't hear a lot of people doubting him. I'm certainly not. And so that was interesting to me. But, you know, Connor, he's become a good interview, and he does answer questions. And actually, I think you're probably referring to the question I asked him about, are you tired of hearing the comparisons to Carson Wentz and Jared Goff? And that was one where you kind of had to be there, because I was purposely in the front row and we had eye contact and I was smiling at him. He knew I was setting him up. And he was smiling in his response. So it's not like, you know, I'm angry, I'm tired of the media. He's getting how to play this game, and he's handling it very well.
Yeah, I thought that read through in the quotes, to be honest with you. Yeah. I admired his position on betting on himself, whether right. he wants to create doubters or, you know, because whether it's a team or a coach or a player, they're whether you're number one at the beginning of the season or not, you're going to create this outside doubt that fuels your fire, press clippings or what have you. I don't fault any player or team for doing that. But I admired Trubisky in his willingness to step up mm-hmm. into a place where the Bears have asked him to be.
Yeah, we're going to have to talk to him more about this as camp goes on, because maybe his doubters is a bigger universe. I mean, maybe he's talking about doubters of the team, doubters of the offense. I don't know. You know, it just I noticed it in that article, and then when he came right back with it again yesterday early and then later on in the press conference, I don't have a problem with it. It intrigues me. I think that's a part of him that we're going to get to know better over the next couple of weeks in Bourbonnais, because, you know, God knows, you got to write every day. You got to fill notebooks, and a lot of the focus is going to stay on him.
Hub, thank you.
All right, guys, take care.
That is Hub Arkish, brought to you by Webb Ford. Searching for a great deal on Fords in Chicago? Visit Webb Ford in Highland, Indiana. When we come back and do the Midday Midway here from Smoke Daddy, I have some baseball information that you are going to say cannot be true. You are going to tell me I made it up. You are going to tell me I'm lying. You're going to say, wait a second, say that again, and then I'm going to say it, and it's true, and you're going to insist that it's not.
I'm really looking forward to this, because I'm pretty susceptible to lies, so I'm willing to accept your fake news, your fake baseball news here in the Midday Midway.
I also have some news about a 13-year-old boy who is probably going to be considered one of the coolest kids ever.
I'm down for that. I will. Yesterday, I meant to do it yesterday, forgot to do it. I will lay down my sword in the Midday Midway today. I also have the biggest Big Ten headline you have ever heard.
Is it another sex scandal?
No.
Or abuse
nope.
scandal?
Nope. This is actual football. This
okay,
is
every
actual,
time I hear Big like, Ten, I think it's some multi-decade institutional cover-up of sex abuse of minors.
3 yards and a cloud of dust type stuff. Like, this
okay.
is biggest Big Ten headline you can think of.
This is the Bernstein and McKnight Show today, coming to you from outside Wrigley Field. Smoke Daddy on Clark. It is beginning to fill up, as are we. I have violated personal rules today. I have found myself self-violating with ingestion of just wonderful barbecue and maybe the best cornbread I've ever had in my life. And I'm breaking all kinds of personal rules here about carbohydrates during the day. There you go, Jay Zawoski. Grab yourself another one of those. They make a compound butter.
It's fantastic.
It's I've had honey butter before, but when Chef Doug says no, this is maple honey butter on top of the warm and sweet cornbread. When you talk about comfort food, this is just bathing in more comfort than we can possibly handle right here. So this should be your place before and after, during Cubs games. Smoke Daddy on Clark. Well, the Bernstein and McKnight Show, all kinds of stuff, interesting stuff in the Midday Midway, straight ahead on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.